The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to The She Word, conversations women rarely have, but really should. In this episode of The She Word, we're having another conversation about sex. In the past 3 years and in over 300 shows, we've covered the topic of sex a good few times. From a relationship perspective, from a young woman's viewpoint, we've dived into sex as you get older, and we've also taken a good look at orgasms and sexual pleasure. But I honestly believe that this is one topic that we just can't talk too much about. The framework of relationships might be shifting across generations, but a large percentage of women of all ages still aspire to lasting relationships. And sex is an essential part of any relationship. It's a part of us as human beings. Keeping it spicy in a long-term relationship is not a regular dinner time conversation, although maybe it should be. Within marriage and long-term relationships, difficulties with sex, different interest levels, or lack of physical intimacy are cited as common reasons for divorce, separation, and breakup, with satisfaction often declining over time. On average, long-term couples have sex about once a week, 54 times a year. However, statistics vary widely. One study found that 31% of couples have sex a few times a week, whilst 8% have it once a month. And 33% either have sex rarely or not at all. Let me say it again, a third of couples in long-term relationships rarely have sex or not at all. And a 2022 study that we've frequently referenced found that only 30 to 60% of women climax during heterosexual intercourse. For men, that figure ranges between 70 and 100%. Essentially, sex with limited satisfaction can surely only be pleasurable for a certain duration. So in this show, we're looking at how to keep your sex life spicy in all seasons of your relationship and navigate satisfaction and pleasure in the long term. Well, to guide us on how we can be much more fulfilled sexually throughout all of our relationship chapters are my outstanding guests. Annika Tanya.
Hello.
A highly respected and recommended qualified counsellor specialised in the area of sex and relationships and offers counselling and psychotherapy to individuals and couples who are having difficulties with sexuality, relationships and intimacy. Anna, look, I really feel like I don't need to introduce you because you've been on this show on The She Word more times than I have. No, not just kidding. But you have been a regular guest
yes,
here,
I
and I'm thrilled to have you back
you.
Again. We'll have a bit more about that in just a second. Nicola Falzon is back on The She Word for goodness knows how many times. You brought an energy and a wealth of knowledge to our previous shows on the topic of sex. You're a gestalt psychotherapist and mental and sexual health advocate. Gestalt.
You got it right.
I got it right this time. Maria Attard is a psychotherapist who provides psychosexual therapy, a master's in family therapy and systematic practice, and is also back on The She Word for a second time. Did I get all of that right? That your qualifications and what you do?
Yes, kind of, no. I have to confirm with
my colleagues.
I love
the way you're looking at these guys.
Okay. But you had so many fancy things. I got confused.
Can we just say that that's what you do?
Yes, that's
fantastic.
What I do.
Fantastic. Did I miss anything out?
Did you mention I'm also a teacher?
No, I didn't.
I'm also a teacher, so I'm a guidance teacher and also PSCD teacher. So I teach and educate my students, also part of my work about sexual health as well. Part of it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'm so glad you're back. I'm really excited about this. Nicola, did I miss out anything about you, I always ask. And I got gestalt.
Yes.
Anna, did I miss out anything about you?
I'm doing my PhD. women's changes in women's sexuality after breast and gynecological cancers.
Wow.
And I'm doing interviews with the couple. So I'm taking it from a couple's perspective.
How cool is that? Well, I mean, obviously all three of you are insanely qualified to be sitting here and talking about sex and spicy, keeping it spicy, satisfaction in a long-term relationship, whatever that might look like. And I think we're also going to dive into, when these changes, we experience changes as women and as men throughout our lives. And I want to touch on that as well. But something really surprised me when I sat down to research. And we've talked about the differences in previous shows about sex and sexual satisfaction and sex in a long-term relationship. This is not the first time we've had this conversation. And we've talked about responsive sex as opposed to spontaneous sex. We've talked about creating sex dates, dedicating time to sex. But the statistics that 33% of couples in long-term relationships either rarely have sex or not at all really surprised me. That really knocked me back. And I want to start by asking a real basic question. How important is sex in a relationship?
It depends on how important it is for the individuals, for the couple practicing it. So for some couples or for some individuals in the couple, it's very important. And sometimes that is where problems come out, because for one partner, it's very important, for the other, not so much. For other couples, it's not so important anymore and it's not part of the relationship and they're both okay with it. The difficulties arise when the couple involved is in different places when it comes to sexual intimacy.
Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested, so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full. Because nothing should stop you, period.
Even in terms of statistics, I mean, for some people, once a month is great. They're super happy with that and they're satisfied with that. For some others, once a week is what their expected frequency is. So just because statistically, most people, I think you mentioned it's once a week, it doesn't mean that is for anybody that isn't having sex once a week that something's wrong, because it highly depends on what is normal for that couple and what is expected between them according to the way they've discussed sex, what they're used to. So it varies, I would say, from couple to couple.
How, it's interesting you say that. I'm wondering how reliable these statistics are. Because when Sue Caruana was sitting at this table on a completely different show, she said that most couples in long-term relationships have sex, like you just said, once a month. Good sex once a month. And that's the average. And I'm wondering if these statistics are really kind of a bit skewed, because if you're going to ask somebody, how often do you have sex? I mean, how honest are you going to be? Are you probably going to kind of come up with the answer that you think is the right answer? So I'm wondering whether these stats are kind of not really what we should be looking at anyway, because as you just said, it depends on how important it is to you as an individual.
Even the expectations, because as we're saying, like if you hear kind of the pressures from society or culturally or what you hear around you, sometimes you hear even sometimes professionals who say certain things that might give you a wrong idea that we should be having sex once a week. And if you don't, somehow you feel not satisfied anymore. But in reality, you would have been satisfied having sex maybe once a month. Mm-hmm. And that once a month is very fulfilling, really good sex. So that would be enough for you. As Anna was saying, the difficulty arises when the partners in the relationship don't don't have the same needs. And that's the problem.
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to go back to a conversation that we've had at this table before when we talked about where we find our sex education from. Mm. And most of it is going to be from films, porn, et cetera, et cetera. And we have this portrayal of, I was watching a TV show the other day and it's the first time that this guy and this girl have gotten together. They're kind of my age and they're having this amazing sex. And I'm going, well, I'm sorry, but she's my age. She's in menopause. That ain't going to happen like that, sweetness. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the reality of it is the portrayal of sex is not anything.
Yes.
But how, to rephrase the question then, how important should sex be? I mean, you're talking about the priorities of different couples having different relevance to that, but should we make it important? Should it be important to us? Should it be important to us as human beings?
It really matters again for the couple. It's really important that the couple, this is something we always stress between us as well, that the couple talk about it.
Yes.
If the partners don't sit down or have a chat, you know, and speak about their needs, you can't understand how important it is for the other person. And we can't take it for granted. Maybe when I was 20 years old or in the first 1 or 2 years in my marriage, it was so important. Later on, life, it might change one way or the other. I'm not saying it increases or the need for sex might change over time. So having a good conversation at different stages of your life is so, so important.
And that is the problem. We don't talk about sex because it is an area which is still very stigmatized, which is still very taboo. And you need time. You need to sit down without kids, without distractions, to actually talk about sexual needs, sexual fantasies, where you feel your partner or yourself are falling short of each other's needs. It's not a conversation you can have while you are doing lunches in the morning when you're exhausted at 10 o'clock at night. Communication is really important, but how much are we giving the time to actually sit down and have a proper, open, vulnerable conversation about it? Because my fear, and this is something I'm sure you also meet in clinic, is that once, if there is a what we call a sexual desire discrepancy and what the couple needs out of sex is different, as soon as the topic is breached, it becomes heated. It becomes a conflict. It becomes you don't look out for my needs. It becomes so.
We talked about this before. We talked about weaponizing that sexual conversation and coming to a conversation where you say, and I can hear these conversations that have been in relationships I've had in the past. In past relationships where you sit there and you say, well, you know, I want this. Why don't you do this? Mm-hmm. And that's completely the wrong way to go to a conversation, because you're immediately going to put someone on the defensive. And we've just jumped to sort of a middle of this conversation. But let's start with this. How do we talk about sex? Let's get this on the table, because everything else we can follow on from that. But how do we talk about sex? Because it's not comfortable. And for something that is so much part, well, let's put it this way. Everybody, almost everybody walking the planet is a result of sex in some way, shape or form or another. Some act. So it is fundamental to us as human beings. But you said stigma. I mean, seriously though, in 2025, it's still stigma. Sure.
We still have, I work in a school. Until yesterday, we still had a mother complaining about the book that we use in PSCD. It's a book that has been published by the government, so it's used in all of the state schools and some of the church schools as well. And I teach in a church school. So it's 2025 and we still have this. And believe me, it was just a picture of a couple. Okay? So imagine this, let alone of anything else. So if we're not already educating our kids in schools, that's the start, obviously, to start to talk about sex, about anything, about the biology, about parts that give us pleasure, about anything. So we have to start to make it normal to talk about sex before talking about the problem. If I never talk about sex, how can I talk about when there is a problem only? That can be very damaging, because every time I bring it up in the relationship, then now I'm skipping a few years from school, you know. But if I'm not used to talking about sex in a normal way throughout the relationship, how will I only bring up problems? It's not fun anymore.
Because I was about to ask you, because you mentioned problems, so shouldn't we be talking about sex and talking about the fun side of it?
Yeah,
that's where I was going, because I think there's a step before. First of all, communication in general needs to be quality. I think that's one of the most fundamental things. If we're not able to have a difficult conversation or a healthy conversation about anything in a relationship, even as individuals, we're going to struggle to have conversations about things that are more sensitive, like sex, because yes, it is still a taboo. And we see this in the clinic all the time, where clients feel a lot of shame to even talk about sex in general, let alone when there is a problem. So this signifies that there is still that taboo. But I would say something that we often take for granted is that sexuality is fluid. So we have the ability as humans to change over time. Our desires will adapt. Our what we like will change over time. So for me, the first thing we need to talk about is, as individuals, knowing ourselves, knowing what we like, so that we are able to express that when we then come into a relationship. If we don't have these building blocks, if we haven't built enough confidence and enough self-awareness to know the fundamentals of ourselves, which is already difficult in the context, let alone then when it comes to a relationship where there's two people or more, where there are different challenges and different backgrounds that then are meeting in the middle, that present different opportunities for good conversations or unhealthy conversations. So I think the building block first is sex education, knowing how we can talk about it, and then being able to build a healthy foundation around communication in general in relationships. It's about the quality of the communication.
Okay, I'm going to go back one, and we're going to the absolute basics here before we continue with sex in a long-term relationship. But you mentioned back there about knowing what you like, and we've had this conversation before, but would you say that most men and women, maybe women are slightly more complicated than men, do most women know what they like? Are most women generally very aware of their sexual desires, what turns them on, what doesn't turn them on? We talked about before on one of the young women's editions about accelerators and brakes. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard this before. It was like, oh my word. And I'm just like, you know, sorry, I'm going to call out my husband. But I'm like, hun, don't do that, because that's, you know, take the dustbin, the rubbish down, because if you don't take the rubbish down, that's a brake. You know, when you're hitting the accelerator, hun. But, you know, it really does make you think about these things. But do we know what we like?
I think the younger women are better than our generation, because sex education is thankfully better. But we still do get young women with problems, with sexual problems, because they never touch themselves. They don't know what feels pleasurable for them. They don't know.
Not even how they look, what it looks like.
Yes.
How they're made up. So how can you know?
Yes, that is one of our tools of sex therapy, that we ask a woman, especially if she is going through problems like painful sex or what we call vaginismus, which is the inability to have penetrative sex, to actually get a compact mirror and have a look on her genitalia and check how her labia look like, her clitoris look like, because we're made very much differently from one another. For men, it's not a problem, because men usually have to handle their penis every day, because they
and
need to go
the
to
outside.
The toilet. And it's on the outside. For us, we sit down and to pass urine, and we can't look unless we get a mirror. So it starts from, as you said, from a very, very basic place of how our genital area looks like, which again changes with age, changes after childbirth, changes in menopause. changes after any form of illness. So it starts from a very basic place.
I'm glad you said that. I'm just going to jump in because, Annie, you just said it changes. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in a few minutes is the changes in women's bodies and long-term relationships and the impact on that and how that's going to work. But I'm glad you said that because I think we don't say that enough. We don't normalize the fact that we change,
yes,
that our bodies change, and we physically change. How much we want to have sex, how often we're going to orgasm, how many times we're going to orgasm, all of that changes. When we get to menopause, we have issues with dryness and libido, and these, yes, all of it, hey, it all gets a bit complicated then. But it is, I just want to throw that out there and normalize the fact that everything changes.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the most important things that couples need to realize, because we tend to have expectations that the relationship is going to stay exactly how it is right now. But 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 20 years down, 30 years down the line, we will change. Our bodies will change. What we look like will change. What our interests will change. So when we're expecting our partners to be exactly the same, or we're not having that awareness that what we're committing to is a promise of falling in love again and again, because we are going to experience difficult things and life things.
Say that again.
Out of milk, bread's gone, and the kids are hungry? Don't stress. There's a Dave's just around the corner. Open 24/7. Or skip the trip. Just tap the Dave's app. Tap, tap, tayyep. They'll deliver straight to your door. No minimum order, speedy delivery, and fresh fruit packed with care. Dave's cares about you.
You Which said part? Falling in love again and, yes, again. Talk to me a little bit further on that. Wow. This is, wow.
I have this conversation with a lot of the couples I work with, that especially in younger couples, because I feel like this is something we've missed in the past, where what I really believe that what we're promising when we're committing to someone is a promise of trying to fall in love again and again, because our partners will likely change when we experience grief, when we experience anything, becoming a parent, all of these changes will shift our priorities, will shift perhaps where we want to live, whether we want to stay in the same country or not. And these are challenges that sometimes we don't make space for. So when they happen, we don't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So when we're committing to someone for the rest of our lives, and I think we've all seen that in research, commitment is one of the main issues that younger people are facing, a fear of commitment. This isn't something new, but newer. And it comes from the reality where we're living, where, there's social media, we're seeing so many different lives, we have so many more opportunities. But that means that we need to be aware that changes can happen, sexually as well, of course, but even in general. So when we're making that promise to, you know, I will be willing to try and fall in love with you again in any opportunity that we have in life, whether your desire changes, whether your body changes, I think that is something that can support us surviving long term in relationships.
I love what you said there, because what we are actually doing when you make a commitment is you are promising to try and fall in love with multiple versions of the same person. And I love that, because that actually, I think for a lot of us, takes off the pressure of saying, oh, you're not who you used to be, and moving forward. But it also puts an emphasis on still trying to be the best version of yourself, yes, for that person in, yes, every different situation.
It's not just promising, it's choosing.
Yes.
You are choosing to fall in love with that version of your partner over and over again. You make a promise at the initial when you commit to a long-term relationship, but then every day you choose to stay in that relationship, to invest in it, to try and make it work, to have a better sex life, to be good parents if there are kids, to be committed to your own growth and to the growth of your partner. It's choosing. There's a choice, because this is something else that media causes a disservice to us as human beings. It portrays the image of the choice. It is a choice that I am married to the same person for the past 30 years. It was a choice. And I had to do it for a number of times because of life situations and because life happens and we change.
So every morning it's getting up and looking at the person that you're with and saying, I choose you. Today, I choose you.
In spite of.
Mm. Yes.
And it takes lots of hard work.
Yes.
It just doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. You need to work hard on the relationship, I think, continuously. And this idea that somehow you fall in love, all, you know, clouds and bubbles and happiness and
fireworks.
It doesn't work that way. And that's a wrong, like on TV, all it's things of the movies. It doesn't happen that way.
Can I ask you so, though, and we're going to come back in just a second to this whole idea of sitting down and communication, because I want to ask you about tips and guidance of how we can have good communication and particularly about sex. And I know we've mentioned it before, but I want to keep coming back and reiterating this. Before we do that, I hear this over and over again, people saying you have to work hard. What does hard work look like in actual physical, tangible terms? Because I think we can say, oh, hard work is forgiving someone's behavior. Well, not everything should be forgiven.
Exactly.
And I have, as an older person, I'm now questioning when I get frustrated by something, hey, Trudy, why are you getting frustrated by this? Do you have the right? Are you in the right position to say this is not okay, or is that you just being reactive? What is this hard work that we often talk about? What does that really look like? What is it?
First of all, you stop once in a while and have a conversation. We're living such a crazy life that sometimes don't have time to stop and talk. Acknowledge the change that we were talking about. We're always going through change. There are some massive events like having kids, changing jobs, moving country or moving house. These are massive events. But there are others in between that on a daily basis almost, we're changing all the time. So every now and then we need to stop and acknowledge that, yes, we're changing. Both of us are changing. So what's happening in the relationship? So for some people, it might mean seeking help through therapy. It happens. You know, so we have this idea sometimes that therapy is only when things go wrong again. Some people come, I had some a couple recently, who they were preparing to get married. So they want to be sure that they are ready, which is beautiful. No, instead of, sometimes they have this course in Malta before marriage. So that's one way. Okay. And some people, these came just to make sure that if there's something that they need to trash out, to be really prepared, you know. So the idea that you go for only if you have problems needs to change as well. You can sort it out on your own, maybe, as a couple. But yes, if you need help.
The reason I'm picking on this phrase, hard work, is because to me, that, and we'll come to this in a second, how you framework communication and conversation, to me, if you put that in the right context and if you put it in the right setting, that's not really hard work. That I think that idea that we have to work hard can put people off and make people think that we shouldn't be doing it.
It takes a bit of effort. It's easy to just let everything slide, and it can take months of letting things slide. You just talk about who's taking the kids where, who's cooking, who's doing the laundry, basic stuff. And it can really take months of doing that, the routine, mundane things. But at some point, you need to really make an effort to really talk.
And honestly, hard work isn't a bad thing. When we look at it in the context of running a business, of anything else, hard work is fantastic. So it's not really about it being hard in the sense that it's something we don't want to do. But if we are consistently making effort to stay up to date with the different aspects of our relationship, like we do other things, then it avoids us needing to do or experience periods where we're really disconnected or really at each other's throats for little things. Because if we've consistently worked hard at staying present, at staying connected, at remaining aware of what the other person is experiencing, for me, that's hard work, but in a positive sense, in the sense that we're making sure that regardless of what's going on in our life and how busy we are prioritizing that time to be connected, even if we don't have time to spend 5 hours a day together. But once a month, for example, I have couples that have an official relationship check-in. Once a month, we sit down and we'd say, Was there something that bothered you this month that we didn't have time to talk about? Is there anything that we need to plan for in the coming month where we're going to have a crazy busy period? So these things that we can put into our routines that help facilitate our ability to have healthy conversations where we're not trying to steal conversations, as Anna said earlier, over making breakfast in the morning.
It's funny because listening to you guys talk, I'm thinking to myself about conversations that I have in the past and probably still do take for granted. You assume that the other person is going to take the garbage down in the morning, you assume that this is going to happen and that your partner is going to take the kids, or that this person is responsible for cooking, or this, and these are all barriers to then when we're coming to the conversation about having sex and so on. These can be breaks. These can be mm-hmm. what stops you from feeling like you want to get down and have a great time with your partner, because you're still thinking about who took the garbage down on the morning.
Garbage thing is something that really comes up. I don't know in your cases. But it's not about the garbage, really, obviously. But it's about what this means. Like, you're ignoring me, you don't respect me, you think I can do everything on my own, you underestimate, you know, and everything. So, but the garbage thing keeps coming up.
It's about mental load. So I think the vision of labor in the household, again, this ties back to communication. And we're like, why does this have to do with sex? But because if we are not having fair division of mental load, and mental load means keeping track of all the things that need to be done, not just doing them, keeping track of them mentally. Mm-hmm. These things are the things that will pile up eventually, and then means that we don't have time for sex and we don't have desire for it in the first place.
Because you're disconnected.
Exactly. Yes.
So before there's sex, in between these two, there's the connection and then there's the physical sex.
And some couples, I find, while I'm hearing you talk, become functional. They function perfectly as housemates, as parents, mm-hmm. But to have sex and to have intimacy, there needs to be play. There needs to be vulnerability. There needs to be lightness. And when a relationship becomes very, very functional, and who's going to take the kids where, and how much loan do we have to pay this month, it kills the lightness and the playfulness that is needed for us to joke, to tease, to be together, to touch, to... So I find some of the couples I work with, when they start talking, you realize they function brilliantly and they're like a well-oiled machine. But then when it comes to lightness, when it comes to, and maybe because of what also Nicola is saying, because there's a lot of cognitive load, there's a lot of mental load, and one of the mm-hmm. partners is maybe pulling up their weight much more mm-hmm. than the other one. This lightness gets dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. If you think about relationships in the very beginning, in the very year and a half, 2 years of a relationship, there's fun, there's lightness, there's so much preparation before you actually meet the partner. There's
excitement.
There's excitement. And functionality usually is not a priority, but then as the couple moves along and buys a place together or rents a place together and decides whether to have kids or not and have a pet, and function becomes almost the main thing. And mm-hmm. that kills the lightness and the playfulness that is needed. There's a lot of playfulness in sex.
Mm-hmm. We're going to dive in just a second in exactly that. We're going to dive into the dynamics of a long-term relationship and all the parts that can cause that playfulness to stall. But before we even get there, based on what you guys have all said, it seems to me communication, talking, is fundamentally at the absolute center mm-hmm. of everything. So let's talk about talking for a second, mm-hmm. because whilst we've touched it already, I'm going to just acknowledge it's difficult. It's also difficult because we don't always know why somebody is triggering us, why somebody's pressing our buttons, why the garbage is such a big deal, but why that's such a problem. We don't always know that. We don't know why that is. So how do we, I'm asking you guys, give us some practical ideas of the yes, the what you should be doing to set the scene for communication and how we go about it, and the big no-nos, the big like, don't do this.
I would say the biggest no-no is criticism. Mm-hmm. We have, I see it a lot. I don't know about you, but I would assume so, especially in Maltese culture, we can be very critical in the way that we give feedback. And when we are critical in the way that we give feedback, so it means I'm placing blame on you for not taking out the garbage. We're going to stick with the garbage, apparently. if I tell you something like, you're always like this, you're useless, you never take out the garbage, you're going to take that as a very personal attack because I'm attacking you personally rather than saying, it really frustrates me when you don't take out the garbage when we've discussed it because it feels like you're not listening to me. That makes for a much healthier space for a conversation where we're understanding the let's say, bad behavior that you did in forgetting to take out the garbage, the impact it had on me, rather than me attacking your character for forgetting to take out the garbage. Because then that's why it becomes, why are we fighting about the garbage? But it's not because of that. It's because of the way that we are communicating impacts how I'm going to receive that feedback. Mm. So criticism is a big one. Being careful at how we share feedback, at how we word things. To be respectful is a big part because we tend to throw diplomacy out of the window with the persons closest mm-hmm. to us.
Yep. So we should go back to this diplomacy because if we can't talk about garbage, how are we going to talk about orgasms? You know, exactly yes. the same applies. You know, well, you always orgasm before I do. And once you've orgasmed, you're not interested in my orgasms. If you can't have the conversation about garbage, you're not going to get to that point. Mm-hmm. So the first point here is not to criticize, to come at this as a compassionate conversation. Yes.
We focus first on the feeling. So she said, it makes me feel frustrated. So the feeling first before we point our finger. So first we talk about how this, whatever issue it is impacting me, how I'm feeling about it. It's a bit safer way to start.
Mm-hmm. The other person will feel less defensive because if I am owning my feeling and saying you hurt me by ignoring me completely and not taking out the garbage. The person, my partner can say, I'm sorry, I completely forgot. If I say, you're always the same, every day it's the same thing, the garbage is piling up, the other person is going to start defending themselves.
Can I just throw in a bit of a curve on this one and be devil's advocate, but we're talking as women between us women in the context of women. Now, if we put that into the context of a heterosexual relationship, for instance, it's hard enough to talk about the garbage because I might ask 100 times and I'm not saying this is the case, but I might ask 100 times, can you take the garbage down? And then I'm exploding because actually there could be potentially a barrier. Is there any way that we need to navigate this with opposite sex to be assertive as much as we need to make sure it's understood as something important without being aggressive?
Set protected time to have a conversation. We find when I suggest this, have a date night every week. I get all kinds of excuses from the couples I see. And you start getting, all the day we're working and then we're going to let our kids with grandparents again to have a date night. We don't have time. We find time for the things and the activities that are priority to us.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
So we need to prioritize our relationship. And we need to set protected time, because how are we going to talk about orgasms and about sex and about sexual desires with kids running under the table and with a television blaring full blast and with, it's impossible to do so with mobiles in hands, replying to emails, doing work stuff. So setting, I think that is the step number one, setting a protected time to have a conversation. And this is not just about sex, this is about everything. And having a check-in and saying, as Nicola said, saying, is there anything we need to discuss? What happened 2 days ago? Why did you react so, what triggered you? Why did you react so badly? What? So setting protected time for important conversations, because our it is giving a priority to the relationship and showing that our partners are a priority.
It's being intentional. Mm-hmm. And I would say also to treat things with curiosity. So what you've just said, and you mentioned it earlier as well, looking at, okay, why did I react in this way? Was it actually about this glass not having been washed, or is there something else that's coming up? And you might argue, but is everybody emotionally aware enough to have these conversations? Maybe not, but that's why I go back to the beginning, where we as individuals need to continuously work on ourselves, even when we are in a relationship. We're not there to fix each other, but we're there to be a supportive person to our partner while we're navigating life and learning our triggers and why we react the way that we react. And I think regardless of gender and what kind of relationship dynamic you're in, it's always important to check in with yourself to recognize, okay, what am I contributing to this conversation? Why am I reacting in a negative way? Is it because it's true, I didn't do anything wrong and I'm being attacked? Or is there something more to it, that I don't like being criticized, or I don't like being spoken to in this way because that brings up things from previous relationships or my parenting, how I was raised, etc.?
We're bringing this round back to the sex conversation, because we're elevating up past, as you just mentioned, a number of topics that you would be having a discussion about. But we're going to elevate this to even a higher level of maybe perhaps awkwardness. We're not talking about the garbage anymore, and we're not talking about parenting. We're talking about sex. And we know that this is a really challenging conversation for an awful lot of us. So we're elevating it to this level. We know that we're not going to criticize. We know that we're going to set aside time to have that conversation. Is there anything else? Is there scenarios? Are there places that are better to have these conversations? You mentioned about mobiles. I mean, that is, I think it's the one thing that we should all be doing on dates is putting the mobile down, not on the table at dinner, not even on the table. I go to restaurants and I see couples sitting there on the phone. Yes. It shouldn't even be at the table, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
My opinion, it should be out of the way, because for me, what that's saying is that scrolling TikTok is more important than the person I'm sitting with, and that's a big turn off. But is there kind of, we talked about this setting time aside, are there tips, good tips, bad tips for where, how, what?
I'm a parent, so sometimes as parents we give top priority to our kids, and I see it also in school and with my clients, so at school, as you know. And we need to also prioritize us as partners, and even educate the kids that if mom and dad are having a conversation, enough in their room, in the terrace, or in their bedroom having a chat, the kids need to give them time. Obviously, we have to keep in mind the age, naturally. But we don't have to always 100%, like, it's the world goes around them. And sometimes we forget about the part. We were lovers before we were parents. So where did all that go? And we forget it while being parents. Somehow we forget this. So we need to keep this in mind always.
So I'm guessing that conversation should not be at home with the kids around.
Of course not. You need your privacy. But when Anna said date nights, doesn't necessarily have to be going out for, you know, from 6 at night until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
You can set aside the time, even at home. no, we don't need to. We can be a bit creative, adventurous, exciting. Like, just take a little, you know, picnic mat and go on the roof or on a little terrace. As long as you have a bit of quietness on your own, if the kids are not there or they are, you know, they have so many activities. You know, they have activities. And we have 2 hours in quietness. Let's have a picnic at home, you know, keep it a bit exciting and fun. And just have a conversation.
I would say for couples that are starting relationships now, to prioritize this from the start. Because I know it's more challenging if you've been 20 years together, you've never spoken about sex. It's a harder start, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Mm.
Actually, I encourage couples to take that risk, to have that challenging conversation. But people starting their dating life now, talk about it from the beginning. Just like we talk about other things, we should be talking about these fundamental things from the start, because that's the best way to prevent us not knowing how to deal with them in the future. They don't need to be difficult conversations. They don't need to be so dramatic, because all we're talking about is, this is what I like, this is what I accept, this is what is not on the table, this is what is on the table, and we'll learn along the way. We don't need to have all the information now to talk about it, but at least we are creating a space where there isn't judgment when I want to talk about it. And I think that's an important part of what successful relationships look like long term. Safety. And when we say safety, we don't just mean physically, but also emotionally, psychologically, that we can have a conversation about anything and not be met with judgment.
What also can help, because as you said, this is a conversation that sometimes is difficult even to start. There are also online resources that couples can get. For example, at the clinic, I have these cards, different kinds. When I used to study in London, there was a shop of School of Life, and we used to get these cards to use with couples. I have a box called Pillow Talk, and it's all small cards, and you read the card and you answer it, and then your partner.
Question.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And it's all it's like a game. It's like a conversation starter, and there are box cards on sex and intimacy. There are box cards on relationship. There are box cards on attachment and past your maybe there are some things about your childhood that you never shared with your partner, and you can do this. So online, couples can find really, sometimes even they can create them themselves and find sites where actually give them a number of questions that they can go through.
I'm going to get a couple of references from you and I'm going to put them underneath the description of the show just here, because I think that is incredibly useful. It takes so much pressure off you. You didn't come up with a question. It's just part of a resource. Mm-hmm. So let's move on from, we've gotten this scenario. We know where we're going to have the conversations about sex. We're going to start talking about sex. I want to talk about a number of different areas, but starting off by talking about natural shift. And this is where the natural and initial excitement of a new relationship gives way to comfort and security, which can lead to a decline in sexual frequency or passion. If we notice that we or our partner is less interested in sex, or sex is less passionate than it was when we first met, should we be worried? Does it mean that sex won't be as good? Is there something wrong? Should we start with that just very basic question?
I would say along the way, quality becomes more important than quantity. I think earlier we mentioned if the sex is good, whether it's as passionate or as wild as we imagine it needs to be in the beginning or not, it's about the quality of the contact again. So I would say it's natural for things to shift over time, but it doesn't need to mean that that's something bad, and it doesn't need to mean that it needs to stay that way. Novelty is another important part of maintaining a long-term successful relationship, a sexual relationship, because we can introduce new things, and we should introduce new things along the way if we're starting to feel like things are stagnant. But I wouldn't say that just because things have slowed down or changed, that it's a big alarm bell that we need to worry that something is wrong, because as we've been saying, things naturally can change and our needs and desires and priorities change over time.
So the novelty then shifts to familiarity. This person who over time you would be getting to know really, really well, So it shifts in that way, and that's not a bad thing at all.
I really agree with what Nicola is saying. It's not about quantity, it's about quality. So if you are having these conversations, if you are touching base with your partner regularly, there is a certain vulnerability and a certain connection that wasn't there the first year.
Mm-hmm.
If you are investing in your relationship, having these hard conversations, the quality of the sexual relationship or the quality of the intimacy is better than it was in year one.
Mm.
So there is the shift as well. And there is the knowing of this person over a number of years, the choosing of this person over a number of years, which sometimes makes the sexual intimacy more profound, more deeper. So I do agree with the quality over quantity, where connection and intimacy is.
Although on the other side of the coin, there can be Esther Perel, one of the most famous sex therapists in the world, talks about that sometimes we can be too warm to be hot, something like that, because of proximity and how connected and close and safe we are. And because we are in contact all the time, we lose that differentiation and that excitement can tend to go away. But again, if we are investing in being aware of our changes and our attraction and all of these things, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, but we need to be aware of it. And even though maybe we have become experts at our sex because we've done it so many times and now it's not as exciting because we know how to do it, but we do it well, it doesn't mean we can't introduce new things, or it doesn't mean we can't ask, or we shouldn't assume that just because we've done it this way for the last 5 years that it's still equally as pleasurable as it was at the beginning. So again, it ties down to the conversations. If we're focusing on quality and maintaining that quality, it still boils down to us being able to safely talk about things we want to try or change or shift as time goes by.
You mentioned there something that you talked about quality rather than quantity. And it made me think about the fact that as life moves on and as we move through our relationships, a lot of other things are going to come in. As you build those lives together, there's a lot of other impacts on life, whether it could be stress, it could be fatigue from work, which are all things that maybe you don't notice. Maybe you can rise above in the first year because you still have that kind of initial, got to impress him and, you know, I'm still trying to catch him and or her and I want to get her on board. Sleeplessness, this is something we don't talk about. All of these can be factors that affect us. I'm going to come back to this idea of accelerator and brake, because there's a couple of complications. There are the things that our partners do that are accelerators and brakes. And I love this. I mean, I can't believe I was today old when I heard this phrase, but it explained an awful lot to me. But then there are also the outside factors which could be going on in our lives. And I'm just touching on just a couple of those: stress, sleeplessness, fatigue from work. They're factors. Are these actual real factors that would affect us, or are they, to play devil's advocate, an excuse?
They are definitely important factors. First of all, there's the hormonal aspect. So sleep and stress. Sleep helps us to restore, helps our body restore, replenish. So if we're not resting appropriately, we're not filling up, let's say, the way we should in our body, and then we're not able to function 100%. It affects testosterone levels, for example, in men and women. And if we're stressed,
sleep is affected, affects your testosterone levels.
If consistently over time we don't sleep enough, we are not replenishing our hormones correctly or to the appropriate level.
I'm looking at Anna because because
when menopause becomes even more complicated.
But it's interesting that you say that about restoring your hormones through sleep. And we know that testosterone is very much related to libido.
Yes.
I don't feel like I've actually slept properly since 1974 and somehow managed to get thus far, which is amazing. But
we're talking about the brakes.
Yes.
But let's talk about the accelerators.
Yeah.
And sometimes the accelerators, which are quite unique to the couple, can be simply my partner is being extra attentive, or my partner is interested in my pleasure, or my partner is supporting me. Because it's really important to talk about the accelerators while we talk about the brakes, mm-hmm. because if we're talking about, you're referring to a sexual response model, which we call the sexual tipping point model, where you have like a scales, you have the accelerators on one end and the inhibitors on another end. If there are too many inhibitors, there's no sex happening. If there are enough accelerators, sex happens. But accelerators can be very unique to the couple and very, very simple.
Yeah.
Being attentive, making an effort. Your partner has asked you to make an effort, maybe in the way what you wear, to go cut your hair, or doesn't like your beard and has asked you to shave. Sometimes the accelerators are, oh, he has listened, and or
taking the garbage out.
Sometimes because it's not about the garbage, it's about
noticing. Who's taking?
She did not ignore me. It's about being attentive to the other person's needs. It's about support. It's
Can we just talk about that for a second? Because this is really important when you get into a long-term relationship. There is this concept, we've talked about it before, but I just want to really put it down on the table, because it just is so amazing. There are accelerators and there's the brake. It's like in a car, you got two foot pedals, right? It's exactly what you're talking about, the balance. Mm-hmm. And one is going to push you forward and make you really turned on and ready for sex. But sometimes somebody might throw in a break, and the break is going to absolutely stop you from wanting to go any further. And the break could be, for instance, it could be
lack of privacy in many young couples at the moment, because they have a long relationship before they actually get a place, and they have to have sex either at their parents' house or
car.
So sometimes
I'm hesitant because it's not
legal.
I'm telling you, I'm glad you said it.
It can be very expensive. I mean, some couples have to resort to weekend breaks. So how many weekend breaks can you take if you're trying to save money to buy a property? So they say we have to delay this, you know. It's quite a strain. No.
Yes.
So that's one important thing, privacy.
Privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. But it could be something that somebody says. It could be a comment. It could be
a
break can come from all sorts of places. I mean, it just
it be could
anything
be
that turns
your partner
you off.
Does not defend you with in-laws.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
which is very topical in Malta.
Really?
Yes. You feel they don't have your back.
When there are fundamental issues in the relationship like these that build up over time, and we're not talking about them, at some point they take over an ability to have desire in the first place. Because if I'm not feeling heard and seen on things like defending me with the in-laws, how am I going to feel safe enough to be vulnerable? Mm-hmm. At the most vulnerable way you can be is intimacy, or one of the most vulnerable.
So it's worth sitting down then and actually having a thought yourself, and then taking this to a conversation about the things that stop you from wanting to be intimate with your partner.
Yes. And show gratitude when something good happens. If it's sometimes it's not so obvious that we appreciate the effort.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you would say, of course I appreciate. And the other person would say, no, you don't show appreciation. Of course I appreciate. So show it. It's obvious. No, it's not so obvious. Don't take anything for granted. So if you appreciate something, taking the garbage down. Show it, you know, like, I really appreciate that you really took care, you know, to cook, you know, I was busy and you took care of cooking dinner for the family. I appreciated that you know, cleared the clothes today. You show it, and that person would be obviously happy. Everyone loves to be, you know, when someone shows gratitude. Mm. So simple things, it has to can really perceive the break, the gas.
It's interesting that you say that, because we are quite ready to criticize, aren't we? Yes. Oh, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. Yes. And this hasn't happened. And you said that to your mother-in-law, or you said that to your father-in-law. We're very happy to say that. And exactly that, more effective way of getting to where you want to be is to praise and appreciate the times that somebody gets it right, because that will trigger them to do it again.
Exactly.
So we talked about this brakes and accelerators. So it's worth sitting down and making sure that you know what turns you on and what turns you off. And we're not talking about in an intimate setting. We're talking about in an overall setting, in the context of a long-term relationship. But can we talk about, just touch on the outside challenges or the external challenges? Let's talk about kids. Let's talk about work. Let's talk about work pressure. Let's talk about lives as they are today, because I think it's worth putting that on the table so that we can look at how we can navigate those as well. Because as you rightly said, Nicola, we live very, very busy lives.
And stress is a big one, because it needs to be part of our responsibility to manage our stress in general for us to have a good quality of life. But it directly impacts sex. So the hormone released when we are stressed is cortisol. In simple terms, it blocks our ability to have desire, because it blocks the hormones that help us to achieve desire in the first place. So if we are constantly stressed, that is automatically putting a literal break in our system. So stress management is super important. It's important for our mental health in general. But if our mental health isn't taken care of, that is very likely to impact our sexual health, our sexual desire, and our ability to even want to have sex in the first place.
And so, that is why, if you go to Gozo, if you go to a hotel, if you go abroad, sex usually happens.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing because we've talked about the Gozo ferry, the libido impact of the Gozo ferry before now, because it's true. Because you do walk off the Gozo ferry, drive off the Gozo ferry, and suddenly you feel completely different. And when you go abroad, and as you said, you know, not everybody can afford to have couple weekends away, but we can all afford to get on the ferry and just go to Gozo in an ideal situation, I suppose. But also, just to go back to this thing about cortisol, correct me if I'm wrong, is the fight or flight hormone. It's the one that is going to get you really fired up.
Exactly.
It's the one that's and it's important. It's an incredibly important hormone, because we need it.
Yeah. But we're not breaking it down. We're not using it. With the fight or flight mode, when we were cave women, if there was a tiger, I either get this, you know, either I try to fight or I run away. Okay? So the same thing is happening in the stress of our daily lives. It's not the tiger anymore, but it's traffic. Mm. It's work.
It's deadlines.
Deadlines, all of this. So the thing is, I'm not running. Or I'm not fighting this stress. I'm not running away from it. Mm. I can't. And we're not using it to do exercise. A lot of us don't, not a lot of us, some of us don't do exercise. So they're not burning it off, kind of. And it stays in their body. And what Nicola just said happens, that our body kind of shuts down. Why? Because if there was a tiger in front of me, the last thing in my mind is having sex. No.
We know when we need to take that pause, that break. But we feel guilty for stepping away from our partners, kids, and work. We feel like we need someone's permission to have something we simply deserve. The She Word has partnered up with Myoka Spas to give you just that, your permission to take time for yourself, the time you usually wouldn't take, but really should. Use code SHEWORD for 10% off any individual treatment when booking online at myoka.com, or enjoy 10% off any gift box in store with gift vouchers over 100 euros.
I would say
we have had this a really incredible comment on this show when we were talking about this in the perimenopausal show, and I'll reference that underneath here as well, particularly with regard to this cortisol, because this is something that is impacting us as a human race. You can get up from your chair and you can do 20 calf raises. Just going on to your feet, on like this, and that's already going to start breaking down the cortisol in your body. It's actually really easy to get rid of. It's easier to get rid of than we think It is. But you do have to be physical. You have to take a physical action.
Be intentional.
Yeah.
It's all about intentionality. But we are living a life consistently. If we look back, we realize that we've always... Technology has helped us to make life easier. So we created the washing machine so we don't spend 2 hours doing the laundry by hand. But we've replaced that time with more work instead of taking that time to do self-care or find other more healthy things to do with it. And we've been doing that for years and years and years. And now somehow we've maxed out our capacity to be stressed, which means it makes it much more difficult to go back to baseline. Mm. And if we do that consistently for a number of years, this is when we talk about burnout. This is when we start to crash.
Mm.
All of these things impact.
Yes. And the narrative is that you need to earn your break. And again, sex is about pleasure. Sex is about play. So do, in living such a hectic, go, 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 go life, do we feel that we have to earn our moments of pleasure, our moments of play, including sex? So this fight or flight, then it was developed to freeze and fawn response, which is the body freezing in some way or being ready to fight or does not serve us when intimacy and when the sexual relationship is concerned.
I love the way that you put it, Maria, I don't think anybody can...
Having sex in front of a tiger.
Having sex in front of a tiger.
I mean, it's like...
But I think it's the easiest way to explain it. Yeah. If cortisol is what we as human beings have had since we've been on Earth, in order for us to be able to fight the tiger, you're not going to want to have sex in front of a tiger because your fight or flight is telling you to react. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of puts it in context. So in a long-term relationship, to bring it back to this whole idea, we have to take action to be able to reduce the cortisol, to be able to feel sexy. Because it's not, you're fundamentally saying it's not going to happen when you have a cortisol fight or flight situation, a tiger. Yes. You're not going to want to have sex when there's a tiger in the room.
Exactly.
Yes. Brilliant. And you're not going to be relaxed enough and vulnerable enough to be able to have sex.
Yes.
Because our physiologically, biologically, our brain, our body needs to be in a particular relaxed state to be able to switch off and enjoy a sexual experience, enjoy intimacy, orgasm. One of the difficulties in individuals who cannot orgasm is the inability to get to that relaxed, letting go state. So
I think so many couples, so many women are going to be able to relate to what you've just said in that last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because I think we are so busy. We are so stressed. We are so here at this level. And it is fundamentally one of the reasons that it is difficult to be intimate and difficult to have sexual satisfaction in long-term relationships. And listening to what you were just saying back there, I know I have times where, you know, hubby's like, hey, listen, let's get it on. And I'm thinking to myself, I have got way too much. The noise in my head is too much. You put some music on and it turns the noise off.
Yeah.
There are some really, yes.
Yes.
Because it turns the noise off. And it's the noise that stops you from getting excited, and turning that noise off is actually not as hard as you think it is.
But again, you have to be intentional.
And what Nicola is saying is the core of sex therapy, engaging the senses, being in your body, not being up here, not thinking 101 things, and not thinking about the plates that need to still be done and what needs to be done after this.
For example, if you have kids, you don't leave. I mean, if you keep thinking about the kids, again, you can't really relax and have sex. So if needs be, clear the room from kids' stuff. If possible, the bedroom of the couple, ideally, is a bit more, you know, it's one of the accelerators or the brakes, you know. For some people, seeing a cluttered room could be one of the breaks, or seeing things that remind them of the kids. Okay, so if you feel that maybe the kids are can walk on, you know, walk in the room, so that's also a big break. How can you relax knowing that the kids can walk in? The senses, as you were saying, like even a perfume, you can have a particular perfume that reminds you, you know, some of something, and you can use it. That helps you again to get more in the mood.
You mentioned their children. Okay, and I want to direct this conversation into another fundamental area that us as women throughout our journey, our life journey, our bodies change. And so I'm going to ask you, ladies, in long-term, you're smiling, in a long-term relationship, how do we account for the changes that take place in our bodies and the impact that that might have on our sex, good sex, satisfying, spicy sex relationship?
You need to renegotiate the sexual relationship. This is something that comes up over and over again in research, especially in cancer research, where there is renegotiating the sexual relationship. It can be easily applied to an older person, to someone who's growing, to the changes, because the changes is not just in us, the changes is in our partners as well. The physical changes, the hormonal changes. And what that means is that the sex that I used to have at age 25 is not going to be the sex that I have at age 50, because I have changed. My partner has changed, not just physically, but emotionally, psychologically, relationally. Our relationship has changed. So it needs to be a sexual relationship that serves us now.
So, okay, I love this about this whole idea of renegotiating. But what are we what are the instances of renegotiation? How might a woman need to renegotiate with her partner and her partner renegotiate with her throughout that lifespan? Because I'm immediately going to pregnancy. I'm going to possibly fertility issues,
yes,
where you're having functional sex rather than,
yes,
passionate sex. I mean, going from there, then you've got into postpartum, then you've got maybe a sweet spot before perimenopause and menopause hits you. I mean, literally, I can't think of in a woman's life more than a 5-year period where you're sort of sitting in one same spot physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and negotiation is what we're talking about, even something as a position where I would enjoy this kind of position in my younger age, and now, after pregnancy, after birth, or just because I don't like that anymore. So even negotiating the logistical aspect of where we do it and how is...
Bending what hurts.
Exactly.
Using lubrication.
Exactly.
For example.
Not just in sexual organs, what hurts, like a knee, a hip.
Yes, of course. She's very right.
It's true.
You're not going to be as flexible as you were 20 years ago, that's reality.
I'm so glad you said that.
And I have to stop and stretch a bit because you might have a cramp. You know, these things happen.
No, it's true. And the more we can get familiar with making this lightness, no, this is fantastic. Because if we are able to joke and make it light and talk about these quirks that will happen along the way, the easier it is for us to avoid these awkward moments where, okay, I'm stuck, I need to change the position.
And you laugh about it like we did here.
Yes, exactly.
And it's okay, it happens. You just, you know, make light of it, you know.
So I think normalizing and being aware of the fact that things will change and saying it's okay that things will change and we don't expect the same things that we expected when we were 20, it's completely okay. And it's completely normal.
But it's normal if you have that conversation, normalizing the conversation. Because I think that's, and fundamentally, we keep coming back to this idea that it is normal. And it, we should talk about it. And those,
I'm imagining, when Maria said the knee and the hip, I'm imagining someone to climb on the bed taking 10 minutes. I mean, this is the reality. I mean, you face in older age.
And also in general, I mean, we have to keep in mind different abled bodies.
Yes.
There are different bodies, people have different limitations, and sex is valid for everyone and anyone in whatever body, shape, whatever sexuality, whatever. And the more we are open and understanding of that, the less we're going to have problems down the line. Even with ourselves, I mean, I'm sure my colleagues will agree, we work with the topic of shame all the time, about yes. so many topics, especially in this country. So the when we can accept ourselves in whatever form we are and accept ourselves in the versions of us that will change, it makes it easier for us to be okay with having this funny conversation about my knee cracking and my hip hurting in this position.
We don't ever talk about that, do we? We never talk about that. We never talk about the fact that some days you might, I don't know, I'm just thinking, oh no. But you might have eaten something that's maybe given you a bit of a stomach ache yes. and a bit of gas and all yes. these sorts of things. And that's long term. I mean, I can remember saying on this show, it came up recently, that most of us don't fart before we get married or commit to a long-term relationship. And then you do, and there's like no end to it. But it is, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But
yes.
it is... Oh, no. But it is a reality, isn't it? There are aspects and elements, and particularly for us as women, because physiologically, sex for us presents far more challenges than it does necessarily for men, because men's bits are on the outside and our bits are on the inside. So even having that conversation about, as you mentioned, about pain, sexually, but then of course I love this about the need. I mean, I think just every woman is sitting there saying, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, when you're just like, oh, and you get a cramp. So
there is also a lot of shame for men with problems, because our society has decided that to be masculine is equivalent to being sexual. And being able to hold an erection. Mm. I mean, if you see porn videos, a man holds an erection for 30 minutes, which is impossible.
And frightening.
I'm just saying that.
Good thing there's no tiger.
But that's the truth. There's a lot of shame around sexual problems in men, because they think they are the only one in the world with premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction, or because men, as much as women, do not talk about
yes.
it. And they feel they are less of a man when these difficulties happen, or having a low libido. I mean, for a male, it's really, really shameful to have a lower libido than his partner. So so that is why these conversations have to be had.
This is really important, because something, as I've been reading about lately, is optimism bias, I think it's called, or it wouldn't happen to me syndrome, mm-hmm. something like that, mm-hmm. where as human beings, we fundamentally tend to believe that something won't happen to us. We won't be the unlucky one that has erectile dysfunction or vaginismus. So then again, we're not mentally prepared for the eventuality that exactly. this might happen. And it's, you know, something that can, I mean, luckily nowadays, these things, we can work on them. There are multiple therapists, even on the table, that can deal with these things. But we do have this bias that it won't happen to us. So when it does happen to us, it feels so huge and so sensitive.
It keeps coming back to communication.
Yes.
Everything we've talked about yes. today, sitting here, fundamentally comes back to communication.
Yes.
Because I'm thinking about this whole idea of men feeling emasculated because, you know, perhaps there's something that's not functioning for them as they think that us as women really want. But actually, you know what? I think for us women in long-term relationships, it's not as important. It might be for the man, but it's not as fundamentally important for us as women as they think it is. Let's touch on couple of more things in this context and keep coming back to this idea of communication. But we touched on this a little bit earlier, and that is the fear of routine. Mm-hmm. And repetitiveness. And with this show is all about keeping it spicy. And I just want to ask you guys, how do we view repetitiveness? I mean, there is a comfort about knowing what your partner likes, what's going to turn them on, what's going to get them to orgasm, and so on and so forth. We talked about knowing our own bodies, knowing what we like. But you can get into a situation in a long-term relationship where you go to the easy option. I'm going to say easy option, but you know that it's a guaranteed. But then it's not necessarily quite as stimulating as it used to be, even if you're only having sex once a month. It's still not. How do we approach repetitiveness and repetition in the context of a relationship and routine?
I think we can fall into a pattern of believing that or being afraid that sharing something that we desire might shock our partners, or our partners wouldn't be interested in that. So we don't have these conversations, or we don't share our desires or our fantasies, or we realize something different has turned us on and we don't know whether we should talk about it. So,
why do we find that difficult?
Shame. We find it difficult to even acknowledge that pleasure is an important part of sex. Until recently, pleasure for women wasn't talked about at all. It didn't feature in research. It still doesn't feature nearly as much as it does for men. So when the basics haven't even been made important and we're not even comfortable to talk about that, let alone going into the world of sexual fantasy, which can feel a lot more risky to talk about when things don't fit what society has told us is the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does this come back to where we started right at the very beginning, Maria, were you talking about education from an early age? Because I'm just trying to think to myself, how is it that we cannot, as adults, sit down and have this conversation? And yet, it is fundamentally challenging, isn't it?
As sex education thing is this, so we expect it to happen in adolescence. And the kind of it stops there. Kind of when you turn, 16, 18, you're a pro and it stops. So we need to somehow encourage couples to keep learning about, keep getting sex education later on in life. You know, until you're about 16, you're very much not experienced. Then you start getting a bit, you're in a relationship and get to experiment with yourself or with your partners, you know. And then you're stuck kind of. Where are we, our couples supposed to get information from? From pornography, most likely, which is a very unreliable source of information.
It comes back to the phrase that Anna used about renegotiating. Because when, as soon as you said that about this whole idea of ongoing sex education, we aren't in the same phase that we were in when we were 12 or 13 and sitting down with a school book. We've had a relationship. So now we're renegotiating what it's like to have sex with somebody else. And you've already had sex. Yes. Sex ed doesn't give you that guidance. It doesn't explain to you that actually once you've had sex with one person, you got to reframework it for the next person and not rely on what you already knew.
Yes.
Wow.
There is also something else.
Oh.
That I'm thinking of. With couples that I work with, we go back to not just the sex education they had at school, but the sex education they had at home.
Oh, wow.
And was there affection at home with them, between their parents? Because that does influence on how affectionate you are to your partner. On the fact that if you go hug your partner, they remain like this and frozen because they've never seen affection or never received affection when they were kids. So sometimes it goes even backwards, even young kids, 0 to 10, on what they saw at home. Were you seeing a film together, and as soon as there's a sex scene, it's rewinded to the next scene? Because that is telling the kids, this is shameful. I don't feel comfortable seeing this with you. Mm-hmm. Was there talk of just jokes about sex, misogynistic or sexist jokes in the family, but sex is never breached ever.
Lack of boundaries.
This is something I'm very passionate about. Is it okay for a child of 5 to be hugged and kissed by all the members of the extended family? Shouldn't we ask our kids, are you okay with your nanno kissing you? I know most grandparents really crave and wish to be affectionate with their grandkids, but what about the kids? Do we ask them for their consent. Mm-hmm. It builds on each. And I think as parents, sometimes we expect teachers to do mm-hmm. this work for us when it should start at home.
On this topic, at school, some other places, I have the opportunity to do like seminars, talking to your children about sex. And so there is space where we help parents, educate parents on how to approach the subject. What's very interesting, I find that a lot of the participants kind of, you know, between breaks, if they're doing some kind of group work or after the session is over, because I also mentioned a bit about talking about sex with your partner as well. And that's the part kind of that they crave the most. And in between, like in a break, they come to talk to me how they can bridge the subjects with their part. So couples or these parents crave to learn more, not just how to talk with their kids, but also how to do the same with their partners as well, which is very interesting.
This is profound, that sex education is an ongoing, lifelong yes. process. That the information that we learn as children may not have been accurate. Mm-hmm. or appropriate, or it might have been for a finite amount of time. And in the context that we're talking about right now of a long-term relationship, it's ongoing. And mm-hmm. what did we say? What did you say it was called?
Renegotiating the sexual relationship.
Yes.
I love this because it takes all the pressure off. You don't go into the next phase of your life knowing the answers.
This ties back to what we said in the beginning of a promise to fall in love with different versions.
Yes.
We are renegotiating yes. our dynamic at every new aspect of our life.
And communicating yeah. it.
And that takes the pressure off 100% because what we're saying is, I have the willingness to want to develop and change along with you. I'm not expecting you to stay the same and I'm not expecting you to be 100% at the level that I am all the time, but we're meeting each other and supporting each other along the way.
I love what you've just said. And I want to say that we probably need to have this show again. but isn't it true? I started off by saying that, you know, out of all of the shows that we've done on the She Word, you know, we've done, I don't know, 300 shows or so on. Probably a dozen of them have been sex related. And probably we could do 2 or 3 dozen more. Because I don't care whether we keep repeating ourselves. I think it's fantastic that we keep having the conversation about sex and normalizing
yes.
the talking about sex. So we are going to do this again. But what I'd like to do is ask you guys to give us some golden nuggets, some golden guidelines to walk away from this show. Golden nuggets, golden guidelines for sex in a long-term relationship, to summarize or to go back to the points that really mattered from this show so that we walk away just saying, yes, that's exactly what I need to think about.
I think I should go first because they will take them all from me. I'm sure.
Go for it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will leave something for it. Just say one.
No competition. Oh, just got very intense at the table.
To manage our expectations. I think that's one. Yep, yes. You would have said it. Ujvera. I know. So, to manage our expectations. So as we said, we change over time. So every time we need to check our expectations and see that even our expectations can change over time. So I think that's one.
Okay, so that requires communication.
But that's what I'm going to mention.
But I'm repetitive. That requires communication yes. to manage expectations. Okay, you can have more than one bust at this. Something comes back in a second, you can repeat.
I was going to say one of the, I guess, basic things, but it's really important that we prioritize our health. If we prioritize our mental well-being and our physical well-being, our stress management, that contributes to us being healthy long-term and then benefits our ability to have healthy sex lives long-term.
Okay.
I would say protecting time. have protected time as couple, regular. It doesn't need to be a 200 euro meal every time. It can be a cup of tea at home. But having that time fixed every Thursday night, if you have kids, when you put the kids to bed, where you have a conversation and you have a check-in. It's like a VRT of the relationship, having a check-in with your partner if everything is going on.
Okay. This relates to something I heard recently, the 777 rule, which is every 7 days have a date, every...
Yes, I heard that as well.
Yeah, 7 months.
Every seven weeks.
Seven weeks have a day. And every 7 months have a weekend.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. Yes.
Look it up. But 7-7 rule. None of us can remember, but it's really good. I promise you.
But it's sorry, Nick.
No.
It's because you're telling your partner, by that protected time, I choose you again. Mm. And I think that is important.
Okay. What else?
I would also encourage the difficult conversations. To try new things, to make a sexy playlist, to make special time to set up the room in a nice way and have candles and flowers and make the effort to make the experience of sex more than just the physical aspect of our bodies connecting, but connecting in a more profound way.
Yes.
Intimacy is not just sex and not just penetrative sex. There's so much more to it. Mm. So giving space for that makes for a much more profound space when we're talking about quality.
Mm. Both persons in the relationship are responsible for the relationship. So you can't wait for the other person to make a move or to start a conversation or to initiate sex. We are both responsible.
We also talked about this renegotiating constantly or periodically renegotiating the relationship, which I loved. I loved that idea.
And one thing that connects to this is being kind.
Mm.
You are changing, your partner is changing, be kind. Because I think, as Nicola said, we take our partner so much for granted because they're there. Especially in stable, healthy, secure relationships, we know they're not going anywhere.
Mm.
So...
But that also comes back to something that we also threw at the table, which is that you should constantly say, I choose you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's not a given. It's a daily choice. And that choice has to be through different phases of life.
Yes.
And fall in love multiple times with the person that you're with in the context of a long-term relationship. I'm going to say cheers. We will be back for another conversation about sex. But for now... That was absolutely brilliant. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, what a goodie, huh? I do feel like we could sit here for weeks.
And have our dynamic.
I like it too.
I love it.
I was going to ruin your ending.
Oh, what were you going to say?
I was about to because you said you fall in love every day. I was going to say maybe skip a day or two.
Please add that in.
Can we add that in, please? That was absolutely brilliant.
Sometimes you need a
yes.